And welcome to the program. Thank you for hooking up with us. We'll open up our phone lines and go deep into that immediately off the show. We have some really good guests on, as Mick Gillespie and Andrew Bone will join us later on. But number to call is 205-342-9904. You've got our man, Noah Haynes, is at the controls. Matt and Lars with you. Lars, how are you today?
I'm doing great. Like clockwork, my neighbor's lawn man is here. But what a beautiful December crisp fall, or crisp. I guess we are still in fall, right? We're not technically in winter. It's a late fall afternoon, and it's absolutely gorgeous outside. It's my favorite kind of weather. Just being drenched in sunshine, nice and cool. Good time to take your dog for a walk, or take a, as John Feinstein called it, a good walk spoiled on the golf course. And I may be hitting the links here around 2 to see if I can sneak in a quick 18.
I thought Mark Twain said golf was a good walk spoiled.
It actually was Mark Twain. Wow, you busted me on that.
But you are
absolutely 100% correct. And I love Mark Twain. I was actually just looking at some Mark Twain. I was reading some Mark Twain stories last night, his short stories. My favorite is the notorious jumping frog of Calaveras County. And it was weird to go back and read that. I took a Mark Twain class in college, and I absolutely loved Mark Twain. And in a lot of ways, I think he was America's sort of first humorist writer. And but John Feinstein, he wrote a book about golf, which I did not read, but the title of the book was A Good Walk Spoiled. But see, I don't get that. Like, I love golf. I mean, even what the term is, right? A bad day at the golf course is better than a good day at the office. Well, if you and I had offices, but I do. I have an office at Alabama, which I'm slowly decorating. I brought some Star Wars art, in there yesterday.
Nebraska, and then you've got the cornhead too. So
I got the cornhead. I've got pictures of my kids, plural. Forgot that I have more than one. I took them to an arcade last night, and boy, not a wise move by dad. Dad's wallet is considerably lighter. And then we went to an arcade out in Trustville, and but they also have bowling there, and we went bowling, and man, they had so much fun putting the bumpers up. And Farah got a spare, which was a really big deal. And and I don't know if they had these when your kids were little. They probably did, but it almost looks like a dinosaur. But you kind of put the ball on top of it, and then the ball rolls down like a slide, right? And so you don't even have to really push the 8-pound ball that they were using. And but they just it was just a memorable moment. And and again, they had a lot of fun. And I always am trying to do as many things as possible to create as many memories as possible, just like you did.
Yeah, and they did have those, I guess you would call them a stand. It was just metal. They hadn't progressed to the point of putting Barney up there yet, but I certainly understand the concept, and that's a whole lot of fun, and I'm glad you were able to do that with your kids last night. And boy, do I understand the wallet end of them. It still amazes me what parents today, and this is fine, it's an observation, not a criticism at all, what parents today will spend on like a birthday party. Yeah, they'll drop a grand. It's not a big deal.
Oh, you know, easily.
We got a cake and play in the backyard. So different.
We've spent well north of a grand. And yeah, when I was a kid, it was yeah, come on over and let's play in the backyard for a while. And gosh, when my girls turned two, we rented Tumble Bus. And and that is basically a school bus where you go inside of it, and they've transformed it into this little gymnasium for kids, right? And the kids just love it. And was a little pricey, but it was a lot of fun, and the girls still talk about it. But you know, there's Lincoln just recently went to a laser tag party. I can't imagine how much they spent there. Another time, a 5-year-old had his birthday party at Topgolf, and there was like 20 kids there at Topgolf, and the parents they were really nice, very generous. Lived in Mountain Brook, and it was pretty clear that the price was not an issue, put it that way.
I remember here recently, my granddaughter, just for the day, they had a pony. The pony was riding around kids in the backyard, and wow. And that was no fun afterwards, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Anyway, we got a lot of stuff to talk about. As I mentioned, we will have Mick Gillespie at the bottom of the hour, and he will talk about all things Alabama and a lot more. And then recruiting, transfer portal, the whole nine yards, that will be with Andrew Bohm at 1:15 today. I do want to take just a moment to talk seriously about a date in our nation's history that just seems to be forgotten. December 7th is Pearl Harbor Day. And I got up this morning and I went through my regular media rounds, and I did not see a single mention of this infamous day in America's history. So it's not going to go any further, because Big Noon Sports is going to salute all of those involved there and how America responded to that and in kind kept the world free. So remember today, okay? Take a knee, take a thought, take a moment to remember that disaster and just unthinkable act was thrust upon the United States of America in Hawaii at Pearl Harbor. So, Lars, yeah. I know your father was a veteran, my father's a veteran, and I take these days very seriously.
Yeah, you know, I think it was back in 2003, I published my third book, which was called The All-Americans, and it was about the 1941 Army-Navy game that was played 8 days after Pearl Harbor was attacked, and it was the most highly attended sporting event of 1941. And then what I do in the book is I follow two guys who played for Navy and then two guys who played for Army throughout their time in World War II. But I also recreate Pearl Harbor through the eyes of a young man who was up on the what do you call those, up at the nest, right at the top of the Arizona. Gosh, you're gonna have to help me with that. It's like the very top of it's like a lookout.
Crow's nest.
I think it's the crow's nest. Yeah, and he Alan Shipley, I believe, was his name. I'm going back a long time because I'm just doing this off memory, but he played quarterback at the Naval Academy. And I kind of tell the story of Pearl Harbor through his eyes. And it was just horrible. I mean, it was, before 9/11, it was the most devastating attack on Americans in history. And it was, a complete shock. I mean, I think, looking back, that there were some signs of what was happening, and maybe certain things were missed. Certainly nothing like that could happen again because of the advancements in technology and radar and satellites. But, just boy, I could go on for a long time, but it was amazing for me to sit across from, and I interviewed every living member from that 41 game, and I think it was about 26. I interviewed all 26 in person, including Henry Romanek, who was living in Honolulu, just a stone's throw from Pearl Harbor. But all of them, pretty much, we would sit out on their front porch typically and be sipping on some lemonade. And it was like, because they were all near the end of their lives, I would just ask simply, so tell me, you know, what happened? And they would kind of get this faraway look in their eyes and gaze into the horizon. And usually I wouldn't have to ask another question for about 8 hours. I mean, they would just go through everything minute by minute by minute, from when they learned about Pearl Harbor, and then through the game, through getting going overseas, and in some cases, in Henry Romanek's case, he led a platoon on D-Day. I mean, and he's 22 years old, and he's leading 18-year-old kids, and they're in an LCM, a landing craft, and it's a much like the lead scene in Saving Private Ryan. Landing craft door comes open, and they're just, because they were combat engineers, I know I'm being long-winded here, but because they were combat engineers, they were the very first ones to get onto the beach because they had to clear Omaha of the obstacles and the mines, and they had very little sort of support, and it was just a shooting spree by the Germans. And you know, as the landing craft door comes open in about 3 feet of water, Henry's telling everybody, go, 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 go. Henry then jumps in himself, but before his feet even hit the water, he is shot right through the chest, and he thought he was going to drown there in 3 feet of water right off the beach of Omaha. He ended up not, but just really compelling stuff, and just the amount of bravery in World War II and at Pearl Harbor was just staggering. And I encourage everyone, especially our younger listeners, to really study Pearl Harbor and how the Americans responded to it, and how our country responded to it, and how it brought our country together, much like 9/11 brought our country together. I wish it wouldn't take a war or an attack on American soil to do that, Matt.
It is, remember, December 7th, today, and then 1941. You don't talk about money. Ticket prices for the semifinals and the finals are just outrageous. You could have a birthday party for the price of one ticket. We'll be back with more of Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
For money.
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Spoiler 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny sky this afternoon, the high today 59. Clear tonight with a low at 37. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day. A few showers are possible tomorrow night, the high 66. Saturday, cloudy and mild with occasional showers, the high 71. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 57 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains, this is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
hope everybody's having a fantastic Thursday, and hope you have an eventful or maybe just a very relaxing, weekend plan. That's pretty much, since Alabama's not playing its first weekend, I won't be doing a whole lot. So I guess I'll just sit around the house, stay warm, and then dry, because we kind of got the weekend off. Lars, I was just reading one of those articles here about tickets for the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl. Of course, that's Alabama, Michigan, and then you've got the Texas-Washington game down in New Orleans. The average price, and these are some among the highest ever in the history of college football and college football playoffs, the average price for the Rose Bowl is $1,033 for a ticket. Now, the article did say that you could find something, literally nosebleed or worse, standing room only, for about $600. But that's amazing. The Sugar Bowl prices are actually a little bit higher, not a whole lot. But it did tag this story in what I thought was some really interesting information. The most expensive average ticket for a national championship playoff or national championship actual game is $1,752. And you know what it was? I'm not really surprised when I think about it. 2018, Tua to Smith. Alabama won it in overtime against Georgia 26-23. And there are a lot of people right now that pay that just to watch the replay. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But it did, you know, ticket prices are just outrageous. And especially for our era, Lars, what was a Nebraska ticket when you were first going to the games with your dad? $20?
Yes, $25, $30, I think. Oh. $29.99 sticks out, but I think about that, yeah. And I think it was $2 to get into a high school game.
Yeah, and I think the ones that are being played near us, Bryant-Denny Stadium high school games. By the way, quick footnote since you brought up high school. Central and Phoenix City defeated Thompson, the reigning champs, 21-19. And it was interesting that a potential Heisman Trophy candidate was at that game, as Patrick Nix is the head coach of Central Phoenix City. And Bo Nix dropped by to watch the game in Tuscaloosa. I thought that was pretty cool last night. But back to tickets. What's the most you've ever paid for a single ticket, if you want to divulge that information?
The most I've paid for a single ticket
I had to include concerts to reach my top.
I think I paid maybe $200 for the Bengals Titans playoff game. What was it now? Three years ago. Up in Nashville, and literally we were in the corner in the very top row. But I loved it because behind us, and I'm a sunset guy, you know, and you could see the sunset, and you could have see the Tennessee River right there. I believe it's the Tennessee River, and it was just very pretty. But man, it was a commitment to get up there, and so the question soon became with me and my buddies, all right. Who's going down to get the beers and how many do we get? Because you got to factor in your beer intake or whatever your beverage is, and then going to having to use the restroom. Because Matt, it's like this in all the stadiums pretty much. It is like when you are up there and you're looking down, it's not like a 45-degree angle walking down. I mean, it is like if I fall, somehow slip, there's nothing that's going to stop me. I mean, this is like at the top of a mountain here. And so, and I had one friend who has been battling some weight issues, and he was like, I'm up here. I'm not leaving. And he gutted it out. But man, we had so much fun. It was really, and we've talked about it on this show, and just what a great experience that was for me. My first playoff game as a fan to watch in person. How about you? What's the most you've paid?
I think I paid maybe $100, $150 to see the Eagles. And I think I might have paid somewhere near that price to see Springsteen. But I don't know. I can't tell you a sporting event where I had to pay. I bought my daughter a few Alabama-Auburn tickets a few years ago. I'd forgotten about that. That probably broke my ceiling. But anyway.
You and I are, we're very fortunate, though, because we do have a lot of connections in the sports world, and we usually can get stuff at a bargain basement discount.
Not nearly as easy as it used to be.
No, it's not.
No, because now seats that used to be kind of cast-offs, that now they've turned them into a luxury suite or something like that, and they're worth, well, their value has increased significantly. Let us talk to Mick Gillespie coming up on Big Noon Sports.
Laura Lee Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
For Big Noon Sports, coming up.
Include Mick Gillespie, who joins us on Big Noon Sports. Portions of these interviews in our program are being brought to you by Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker. Well, what's going on there, Mixter?
From winter meetings in Nashville.
Oh, cool beans. How cold is it in Nashville? A little colder than here,
cold.
I imagine.
It was cold. I don't know what it was like for you guys, but it was freezing up there. Yesterday.
So, what'd you learn? Anything?
Well, the Ohtani basically was going to, dictate the market. And when he signs, you'll see a lot of things happen. Probably not going to be with the Cubs. I'd say he's going to go back to the Dodgers or go stay in LA and go to the Dodgers. Then, if you trade for Juan Soto, you're going to have to give up half your farm system. But, you know, when you're the Yankees, you're probably like, hey, we're going to pay him at the end of the year anyway if he performs. So maybe, even though you gave up a lot of young players, it's almost like a litmus test. Give you an idea if he can handle that market and that team. And that baseball's got more rule changes coming. And some of the stuff they're talking about includes making the baseball bigger.
Serious.
Yeah, what do you think of that?
I don't like it.
What's the logic behind that?
Well, the logic is this, is that baseball's got a big problem right now, and I agree with them. There's just too many swings and misses. There's so many strikeouts right now. Roger Clemens struck out like 23% of the batters he faced. That's all baseball now. So they've got to get more contact. So somehow they're going to, they're just trying to come up with some ideas to get the ball put in play more. I think that's one of them.
What's the reason behind that? Are the pitchers just that much better than the hitters now?
That's a home run derby.
I think it's a couple of things. First off, the the mentality of hitting isn't making contact. It is hitting home runs. You want, and you want to try to lift the ball in the air. You know, we used to try to just hit line drives. You hit the ball in the center and run. And now we went through this thing where all we want to do is hit home runs. And I think that's part of it. And the other part is baseball is a skill game. And when I was coming up playing, there wasn't academies and, you know, places where you could go and learn from pros. And some guy that was like your shop teacher was also your baseball coach, you know? And you didn't get real, like, instruction unless you're, you know, you had a family member that played and could teach you a lot of the ins and outs. And then all of a sudden, they, you know, every city, every town has a guy who played in the pros that has a facility. You know, the one in Tuscaloosa used to be Future Prospect. And I used to hang out there all the time when I was in college. But I didn't have that when I was a kid. All of those guys now grow up, and then, you know, some of those guys played in the pros, and then they started it. So you got, like, a generation and a half of baseball kids that play on all the traveling teams and understand the game, including pitching, at an advanced level. You know, and guys are throwing harder. There's a lot more spin. I think when you couple that with just the mentality that you got to hit a home run every time you're up, and also that strikeouts aren't that big of a deal. I remember that coming up like 10 years ago, where they're like, oh, who cares how many times he strikes out? You know, like, it used to be you wanted to make contact. And it's almost like with the shift, like, the older guys are looking at the shift and they're going, well, like Pete Rose, like, well, the way that you beat the shift is you move around in the box. Maybe you change the size of your bat, you know, where you can, instead of trying to hit a home run, you can go the other way. We just took the shift out of the game because the guys couldn't adjust.
And here is my observation on this and many of the changes, including the shift. It used to be that players adjusted to the game. Now the game adjusts to the players. Just like you said, perfectly, spot on. Learn to hit the ball to the opposite side of the field. That's part of the game. Learn to hit a double into the gap instead of striking out, trying to hit one 420 feet. The game has changed dramatically, and look at the number of sacrifice bunts and steals. Now, all those steals were up last year because the bases were smaller, but it'll still be baseball. Bases were larger, I should say. It'll still be baseball, but they're changing it. And I don't know, did they give the actual circumference of this deal? How big are they guys? Is it going to be a softball?
I didn't hear that. But I also heard that the baseline could change, you know, so that, you know, that rule where, like, the guys in the baseline and you can call them out. I think they're looking at changing that. And then also the robot umpire, instead of it calling every pitch, it's going to go more towards, you know, like a challenge system in AAA. And then we'll see how that goes. And as soon as they perfect that, look for that to be in the major league.
And you can challenge a third call strike?
Yeah, they'll be able to challenge.
I'm on baseball here.
Yeah, they'll be able to challenge a third strike.
I find this really interesting, but would they kind of use minor league as a petri dish, and would they test out the bigger ball in minor league before putting it into the majors?
No doubt. And I'm guessing that a lot of that kind of stuff, like the bigger bases and the no shift, actually started in some of the independent leagues, like the Atlantic League. And then it went into the affiliated leagues and then the minors. And then, you know, it went to, you know, some of that stuff went to the major league. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. I think that they're going to tweak the pitch clock, make it a little bit faster. So there's a lot of changes on the horizon in baseball.
Did they have an overall review of the, I guess they're going to tweak it a little bit. I the one rule change that I did like last year was the pitch clock, which I've referred to as a hitter's clock because it's more that to me. But I thought that was a success. Totally.
So did I. Yeah. I think everyone did. because the game had to get faster. So they'll probably just shave a little bit of time off, you know, some of the clock somewhere, you know, make it look even a little faster. But they're trying to figure out how to make this game more more palatable to the fan base. So, you know, that's an area where we're going to see some changes. And honestly, I think that, like you, I liked it. I liked getting out of the ballpark in, you know, 2.5-3 hours.
Yeah, like when Gibson used to pitch. Sorry, Lars.
Yeah, right.
All right. Okay. Let's shift to college football here. And a topic that still is white hot in the Spock world is, did the committee get it right? And you know, look, all three of us, I would venture, I don't want to speak for you yet, but Matt and I do believe the committee did get it right. It was just it was a choice that it's like it's somebody's going to get mad no matter what. But just on Sunday morning, Mick, were you expecting Alabama to get in? And then what is the most compelling argument to make for Alabama getting in over undefeated Florida State?
Well, I mean, I wasn't expecting them to get in. I mean, I was, and then people started kind of talking me out of it, you know. And then so when we went through that, the process, I did a show on my YouTube channel, Bama Tailgate YouTube, and I'm on there, and I was screaming when we got in. But I thought that Alabama was certainly one of the four best teams. I, honestly, if we were picking the four best teams, Georgia would be in there too. They just would. They're one of the four best teams. But Alabama was one of the four best teams last year and didn't get in. I think Florida State, and I've heard all those arguments, is probably like the eighth best team, maybe the ninth best team. And they didn't lose any games. But, you know, when you're struggling against Louisville and you need help to beat Boston College. When Bobby Bowden was at Florida State, they used to win those games by 40 or 50. And so I'm just not buying that Florida State's one of the teams that has a gripe. Honestly, I feel like it's Georgia. I think if Georgia was in the tournament, they'd win it. How about that? But I'm glad that Alabama got in, honestly. I mean, I love this team and what this season's been. Alabama's been through the gauntlet. And when you go and you beat the best team in the country, you win the SEC, you got to be part of this. But there's also the other part of it, too, is the SEC has to be involved, because look at the TV ratings. You know, look at how many people watched Alabama and Georgia, and the money that's involved in these television contracts. You know, last year they decided to play this game where they didn't put Alabama in and they put TCU in, and they tried to convince us that Alabama wasn't deserving and wasn't one of the four best teams. And what we got out of it was a 60 to something championship game. So if you're putting the four best teams in, then Alabama and the SEC need to be a part of it. But I don't think Florida State – I hear all the Florida State stuff, and it makes me laugh, because I think they might not even be, in my mind, the top 10 team if they played a real – you know, a schedule that was matching them up against other teams in the top 10.
Well, especially not with their dynamic quarterback. Mick Gillespie is our guest. We've got some more time. We'll dig deeper into football on Big Noon Sports.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny sky this afternoon, the high today 59. Clear tonight with a low at 37. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day. A few showers are possible tomorrow night, the high 66. Saturday, cloudy and mild with occasional showers, the high 71. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 57 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
This is the Big Noon Sports Network.
Gillespie. Mick's coming back from the winter meetings, baseball in Nashville. That's cool. We caught up on that. Now we're talking about some Alabama football. We all know the progress that certainly Jalen Milroe made, but There were other areas of progress that they didn't go unnoticed, but they certainly didn't get the attention that number four did. What are a couple of the others that you really kind of opened your eyes as Alabama got better from Texas?
No, the offensive line. I mean, think about that, right? They were a sieve at the beginning of the year. I mean, and then I saw them throw Georgia out of the box a couple of times. Like, I know everybody keeps talking about, like, getting thrown out of the club. It really is funny. You know, when you go back and you watch some of the best defensive players in the country just get blown up by those guys. And that's what we thought at the beginning of the year, that, you know, hey, this is going to be a road grader type of offensive line. But Proctor's gotten so much better. And we had to kind of go through those growing pains. And the right side of the line's been really good. I think they've been good all year, but they were excellent down the stretch. So that's got to be number one. And then the second thing to me would be the defensive line. You know, I think that coming into the season, a lot of people felt like that might be a weakness. And that's actually been, I think it's one of the strengths of the team. They get after the quarterback. And with that secondary, you know, you don't have a whole lot of time to sit back there and try to make a decision.
Nick, what are your thoughts just on the evolution of Tommy Rees as a play caller and offensive coordinator?
Yeah, he's done a good job. I honestly, the assistant coaches this year, I think we all feel really good about the combo. You got the old vet and Kevin Steele, who's coached for like every team in the SEC, and he's back to Bama for the second time. The defense, they've been aggressive. They've been smart. The adjustments have been off the chart. The way that football is designed now, it's tough to have like a lockdown defense. But he's done a great job getting these guys ready to go and their performance. And then Tommy Rees, think about the RPO game. You know, he took over and probably was very concerned about the quarterback spot because, you know, the game really depends on that position. And who would have known that Jalen Milroe would have progressed like this? He obviously didn't, or, you know, we wouldn't have had a transfer from Notre Dame at quarterback. But we went through the process, and I think, you know, he grew into the job with Milroe, with his team. The RPO game's been such a big advantage for Alabama. And the creativity, you know, the thing with Bill O'Brien, and I have a lot of respect for Bill O'Brien. I mean, I know he's done a ton of things in football and he's a good coach, but I just felt like last year we were so predictable. And, you know, and I feel like with that stuff, you know, it's like being creative is your advantage. And they started doing a lot more stuff towards the end of the year when they beat Auburn and then went to the bowl game, but it was too little too late. You know, where was that against LSU? You know, this year they just kept getting better and better and more creative. And you know, I love the shifting, you know, anything to confuse the defense. And then obviously to get guys out in space. You know, we talk about the running back room for Alabama. Those guys are good, but no one's really broken out where you go, okay, you know, here's the next Najee. They've been okay. But you could fall forward to some of those holes that the offensive line's created against Georgia and get 5 yards. I thought that Roydell Williams did a really good job as the starting running back last game. And Jam Miller's kind of brought in that little punch. And the play call to get Miller open on the pass for the touchdown, I thought that was one of the best calls that Rees and the offense put together this entire year. And I mean, think about how tough it is to score on Georgia. You get that touchdown, Burton makes the great catch, but I felt like that touchdown was a scheme touchdown, and I think Tommy Rees gets an A for me so far this year.
Nick Saban's been a different coach. I think this style of team or the character of this team brought much that to him, but there's somebody who probably keeps these stats, Mick, how many times he laughed or how many times he made fun of himself or joked in a news conference. But This certainly would lead in all of his previous years. Why?
the number of laughs from Nick Saban, definitely up this year. But don't forget, we did also get angry Saban back, too. We picked him up in Gordo on the way to the Mississippi State game, which was great to have him back as well. I think that he's enjoying what he's doing. I think you get to this stage of your life and, you know, who knows how many games he has left, how many years he has left. But he's the best that's ever done it. He's been smart enough not to get stuck in his own way. Jimbo Fisher's out of a job because he refused to develop, to change with the game. That's why he's out. That offense, it's not the way you do it anymore. What worked when he was at Florida State isn't the way that you win football games. And he was stubborn. You know, Saban's been always kind of right there on the cusp of making the next decision that's going to kind of mold and bend himself with the game for success. And I think the other part of it is, to me, is I think he's going to do it as long as he feels like he's connecting with the players. And I think that he's connecting with the players.
Yeah, absolutely. He may be connecting more now, like on a sort of grandfatherly level as opposed to a paternal level. But looking back on the regular season and SEC championship game, Mick, what do you think the key moment was? If you were to zero in and if you had to write about, and describe the very most, the number one most important moment of the season, what game would that be and what moment in the game would that be? Or is it something that occurred off the field?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I think if you said the moment of the season, to me, that changed everything. And it was the second half against Ole Miss when they found a way to get it done. You know, there was a touchdown, and I can't remember who Milroe threw it to, but it was like that moment where you're like, these guys are going to find a way. And all the trolling that Nick Saban took from Lane Kiffin, and, you know, just kind of that stuff I can't stand about Lane, you know, is like, if you lose to him, can you imagine that? And, but in the championship game, you know, I thought Georgia's due, you know, like they're due to lose. You don't win every game. And it was like that, you know, it was like a horse collar here. And, you had the fumble and missed field goal. And you had two great teams going back and forth. You know, two great teams, like, they're just really great teams. And I loved watching Alabama adjust to the fact that it was obvious that Brock Bowers and McConkey were injured. And they kind of took advantage of that, too. That's what good coaching does. But it was just a couple little things here and a couple little things there in that game. But for the first time all year, I felt like Alabama got very close to playing a complete game. Not there yet. And I think that going into the playoff, probably good because the team can keep getting better.
It's always great stuff, Mick. Tell everybody where they can watch and listen and read about Mick Anderson and his Mick Gillespie and his thoughts.
Yeah, look, I'd love to have you guys on the Bama Tailgate YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and hit that. We got content every day, a lot of live shows and talk Bama. And if you're a baseball fan, the Cubs baseball channel. Those are the things. I've got them on YouTube now.
Hey, what a great,
awesome.
What a great deal to talk some baseball right here in December. Thanks, Mick. Drive safely.
Thank you, Mick.
Hey, roll tide, guys. See ya.
All right, you got it. Coming up next hour, we'll talk some recruiting transfer portal with Andrew Bone. Lars, we got to talk a little John Rahm. You'll probably hear the report at the top of the hour in our Fox update. But That's worth a couple of minutes of your time, too, as you listen to Big Noon Sports presented by Haley Sansing Union Home Mortgage.
Someday Thompson is known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll tide as houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
Hi.
WTBC Tuscaloosa and W265 CG Tuscaloosa, a Town Square Media station. Tide 100.9 and streaming on the Tide 100.9 app.
From the Fox Sports Studios in Los Angeles, here's Nick Cope.
News in the world of golf this morning. The Wall Street Journal reports Jon Rahm is set to leave the PGA Tour and join LIV Golf, with an announcement expected this week. The reigning Masters champ and number three ranked player in the world is set to collect a massive payday from the Saudi-backed league. NFL Media reports Steelers running back Najee Harris is expected to play tonight against the Patriots despite a knee injury. In baseball, the Yankees acquired outfielder Juan Soto from the Padres last night as part of a seven-player deal. In the NBA, Joel Embiid went for 50 points as the Sixers beat the Wizards 131-126. Luka Doncic had a triple-double in the first half as the Mavericks blew out the Jazz 147-97. Doncic had 40 points, 10 boards, and 11 assists. And Nikola Jokic had a triple-double, but the Nuggets fell to the Clippers 111-102.
Covering SEC sports like kudzu on the roadside, this is Big Noon Sports.
Coming in after halftime and coming in hot. You just heard the story from Fox Sports concerning Jon Rahm. I know we're in the middle of college football season, but Lars, you and I love the game of golf, and particularly, I've been a big Jon Rahm fan for many, many years and was very happy for him when he won the Masters. But the news that he is likely, and this is all still if, and the articles and the report you just heard and the articles I've read do put if he does that, because neither side, PGA, LIV Golf, or Jon Rahm, has said that this is firm. But, by the way, Fox also said a lot of money. Well, the report I saw was $600 million to go to the LIV Golf Tour. I'm greatly troubled by this because I thought Jon Rahm was one of those guys like Roy McIlroy and JT, Alabama's own, that was going to, you know, stand fast with the PGA. But, Lars, you're talking about $600 million. You know, that's hard to turn down. I'd like to say I would, because of the way they treat their women and some of the citizens in that country and in that area of the world. But that's a lot of money.
Yeah, but there have been signs for weeks that this was coming. First, he pulled out of the what's called the TGL, and that's the technology-driven golf league that's being run by Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy, that's partnered with the PGA Tour. And then my really good buddy, Alan Shipnuck, I mean, we started basically on the same day at Sports Illustrated, and Alan is, you know, he wrote a New York Times bestselling book on Mickelson. And Mickelson and Rahm are really close friends, and they share an agent. And Alan has been tweeting and telling people that Rahm going to LIV Golf was, quote, a done deal, unquote. And then this week, Rahm was not in the field for the American Express tournament, which he won last year. So, it seems like it's a done deal. According to the Wall Street Journal, they're saying that that Rahm is going to leave this week, assuming talks don't fall apart, and it doesn't look like it. And as you said, Rahm, who is the reigning Masters champ, and he's one of the few guys who's capable of winning week in and week out, that he's going to get somewhere in the range of $600 million. And, this is going to represent just a huge seismic shift in the golf world, because Rahm is going to become the face of LIV Golf, right? And
what'd they give Mickelson? $250 million?
Yeah. And $600 million. I mean, that is just staggering. That's staggering. And this comes as Jay Moynihan, who is the head of the PGA Tour. He is planning to meet with Yasir Al-Rumayyan, I think is how you pronounce it. And he is the governor of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, which really the PIF, they run LIV Golf. And I think you can see that LIV and the PGA are going to become more entwined. And, who knows where this is going, but I just wouldn't be surprised that if it won't be called LIV Golf, but I think that it's almost an inevitability that the PGA is going to get absorbed by LIV.
Wow.
I really think that that's where we're heading, solely due to the amount of money, this bottomless pit of money that Saudi Arabia has. And I can't even believe I'm saying this, Matt. But I think that that's where this is going, because I don't know if the PGA can survive.
What's next? They're going to buy Major League Baseball? I understand the chase after the American dollar. I mean, that's, our country was built on capitalism. Make money. But you don't always have to make it the same way. And I guess I'm just very, very traditionalist you just can't take money from people that do that to humanity.
And the state-sanctioned murder of a reporter. I mean, this is just and the treatment of women, and the links to 9/11. Like it's really disturbing, and if you examine this from 30,000 feet, for Saudi Arabia, this isn't about golf. This is about opening up business opportunities to the West. This is a big PR effort. This is at the core level, this has nothing to do with sports. That's just my opinion. I could be totally wrong on this, but it just feels like Moynihan, the head of the PGA Tour, he's running out of options.
Well, they're forcing him too, because they can buy and buy and buy, and the PGA can't.
No.
And I don't know. America does not seem to like the LIV Golf Tour. And it showed up in dismal TV ratings. And their coverage was bad.
I do like the fact that it's a little more relaxed. And, they got music playing. The players are in shorts. And the players seem... It's just not as stuffy right, as normal golf.
I kind of like that stuffiness.
I know. I do, too. I do. Don't get me wrong. I do, too.
Aren't you the guy that says they shouldn't wear shorts on the PGA?
I do. Yes. But at the same time, if you're going to cater to younger audiences, you know, the demographic they're after is not you and me, Matt.
Obviously.
but this is a huge story in the world of not just golf, but in the world of sports, and pretty troubling. But I know we gotta get moving along here, because we gotta dig into Andrew Bone and get his analysis of what's going on with the transfer portal and Alabama recruiting.
You know, Mickelson, I understood. He is literally at the very end of his career, particularly at the PGA level. You know, he could do very, very well at the senior tour, but why would he do that when he's making $250 million from the Saudis? But Rahm would not be among those that I would think that would cross over.
Matt, I don't think I haven't felt this old in a long time, but I was watching a little golf this morning on ESPN. Justin Leonard is playing on the senior tour.
Yep. There'll be more that pop up like that.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, it feels like just 5 minutes ago when he was a young up-and-comer.
Yeah, and how about when grandkids of players you grew up watching are starting to play?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, welcome to the club, Lars. Hey, when we get back, we'll talk with Andrew Bone, and he's going to bring us information on Alabama recruiting around the nation, and really a dive into the transfer portal. Ohio State now has 13 players that have entered the transfer portal. We'll be back with more of Big Noon Sports, presented by Haley Sansing, Union Home Mortgage.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny sky this afternoon, the high today 59. Clear tonight with a low at 37. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day. A few showers are possible tomorrow night, the high 66. Saturday, cloudy and mild with occasional showers, the high 71. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 57 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
The best sports talk in Alabama. This is Big Noon Sports.
It is indeed, and we welcome into the program. It's been a while, a couple of weeks at least. Andrew Bone is joining us. Bone, did you have a good Thanksgiving? You got all your Christmas shopping done and all?
Yeah, I got a little bit done. I probably still got a few more things to add, but yeah, we had a good holiday. How about you guys?
Yeah, I had a great Thanksgiving. Hadn't done a lick of shopping yet, but I'm a last-minute guy. I've realized that, and I embrace it. So,
yeah,
but I don't have children. I have grandchildren, so I shop for them. But I don't have children, you know, that are young, and that's what Christmas is so fun about these days. So normally I would have, you know, 20 years ago, I'd have had it all done and probably boxed up under the tree. So
I did ask my wife. I did ask my wife recently, said, do I need to get anything for the kids? And she said, nope, already handled it. I'm like, all right, perfect.
Wow. Wives,
that's a great wife right there, Andrew. Wow. Hold on to her.
Really?
We've
talked it to death, but just a real quick thought on Alabama over Florida State, and then let's move right into recruiting.
I mean, yeah. it was kind of shocking, I guess, when you saw that the committee actually pulled that off. I mean, you know, I think they did what was supposed to be done, is, you know, pick the four best teams, and Florida State wasn't going to win the national championship. You know, we know that. Everybody knows that. You know, were they most deserving? You know, maybe so. Undefeated season, but, you know, they weren't going to be able to compete with some of these teams that are, or any of the other teams that are in the playoffs. So I think they got it right. You know, looking forward to seeing how it all plays out, you know, here in the next few weeks.
Can you tell us how quarterback Julian Sands' senior season went? We haven't talked to you for a while about him, and I know he's going to be on campus here very shortly.
Yeah, Julian had a great senior year. I think he had over 2,400 yards passing. I want to say 28 total touchdowns and only one interception, which he had an interception in his final game, but completed over 75% of his passes. Just an outstanding senior year. He's going to be on campus, I believe, on December the 16th for bowl practice. He's going to be flying in on the 15th. So he is ready to go. He's excited about getting to Tuscaloosa, getting things started, going through the bowl practice season with Tide. And he cannot play. They're going to have a lot of their signees on campus for bowl practice. But none of these guys can actually play the game. People keep asking us if they can play. They can't play, nor would Alabama throw them into that type of fire 3 weeks on campus practicing with the team, no matter how good they are, how highly ranked they were coming out of high school. But, being able to get on campus, go through that experience, be with the team during bowl practice, getting used to what practice is like, what being coached is like, especially in that type of environment. It might be a little bit different for spring practice, when most of these guys get on campus in January and they go through the winter workouts, they get on campus, they go through spring training. Well, you're getting ready for a national championship, and you've got these high school kids that are arriving. And they're going to be going through playoff practice with the football team, so it's going to be a little bit of a wake up call for these guys, but also an unbelievable opportunity for them to take in a lot and get them ready for next year.
Andrew Bone of on3.com is with us. Andrew, it's been in my lifetime, and not all that long ago, that there would be one of the assistant coaches that had the staff mention he's a linebackers coach / recruiting coordinator. Well, we all know that's way past. I mean, now there are staffs to handle just the recruiting from high school. Are there equal staffs that just handle transfer portals now?
I think you have a lot of the same guys who are working in the department. Now, you might have different schools, but at Alabama, Alabama has such a huge athletic department budget that they've got a lot of people in there that are working, whether that's transfer portal, high school kids, junior college kids. Of course, you're also trying to recruit guys that are on your team right now to make sure that they're happy and that they stay and they don't get lured to enter the transfer portal and go somewhere else. There's not necessarily one particular guy that's in charge of just the transfer portal, but it's a whole kind of department of people that are working the full landscape of it, from recruiting to transfer portal and all that good stuff. So they got a good team in there. I think they know what they're doing. I think the biggest thing with the transfer portal and even high school recruiting is, we kind of knew, is NIL. You just don't know really what kids are getting offered, what college kids are getting offered, how much you're going to have to potentially fork out to get somebody. And, are you going to extend a big offer and potentially risk upsetting people on your own team? It's just kind of a slippery slope that you're having to navigate, especially this month. I mean, this is a wild month for recruiting and the transfer portal, because most of these high school kids who haven't made decisions yet, that NIL is going to be an important factor in a lot of their decisions, and that there's a lot of schools that are trying to make those last minute offers, and even kids that are committed elsewhere right now. They're not signed yet. You don't sign until December 20th. So a lot of kids are still trying to get picked off from other programs. So it'll be interesting to see how these next few weeks play out, especially for Alabama, as they're trying to, one, add some more high school talent, B, trying to figure out who they can who's in the portal that they can potentially go after. Of course, they're also probably waiting to see who on their team is going to come back next season. That's not just players that are in the portal. But these are guys that are trying to decide if they're going to enter the NFL draft. Of course, now with NIL, a lot of those guys that were going into the draft that were third, fourth round picks, they were going in there knowing that, but they wanted to get some money. Now they're able to get money on from NIL. So a lot of the kids that, if you're not a first round draft pick, they're not even going out into the NFL draft anymore. So you got to manage the numbers on your roster. You got to make sure that you don't go over that 85 limit. So they're still kind of working to see who's going to be back and who they need to who they really need to sign.
Two very different questions for you. One, Ty Simpson. Do you think he stays? Maybe just a gut feeling. No idea if you have any reporting on that. And also, that I am sort of infatuated with Caden Proctor. And what are you seeing out of him? Are you seeing the characteristics and traits that he displayed in high school now sort of coming out?
So it cut out on me the first part. I heard the part about Proctor, but who else did you say?
Ty Simpson. If you have any sort of insight as to whether or not you think he'll enter the transfer portal.
Gotcha. Well, regarding Proctor, we had a chance to see Proctor in high school. I mean, he has the size, he had the athleticism, he had footwork. I mean, he's a big kid. I mean, he's 6'5", 350 pounds plus, and the way that he can move, you're like, man, this guy's got a chance to be really special. But it might also take him a year or two to really develop into the system and get his body in shape. But he kind of got thrown into the fire right away. I mean, his first big football game was against Texas. I know that Alabama played Middle Tennessee, but Texas was a pretty tough opponent that second game for a true freshman left tackle who's 18 years old. He has developed unbelievable throughout the rest of this season, and I think he showed a lot of progression. He's going to be an All-American in the next couple of years. He's already a freshman All-American this year, so we certainly had high expectations for him. Number one offensive lineman in the country during his senior season in high school. So you always expect those guys to be pretty good once they get to campus, especially at Alabama, who probably develops offensive linemen better than any program in the country. And then, as far as Ty Simpson is concerned, I'm not really sure what's going to happen there. Could kind of see it going either way. Ty told us 2 years ago when he was coming out of high school, he said, it doesn't matter to me if I'm a starter my freshman year or if it's my fifth year. I am staying at Alabama. That's where I want to be. But, with the way NIL is these days, there's a lot of opportunities that get presented to a lot of kids. And it's something that I think a lot of them start thinking more about. And they also think about, getting on the field and playing and competing and having an opportunity to start. Now, Jalen Milroe's probably not going to give up that starting quarterback position too easily next year. So, does Ty potentially, test the waters? Maybe, but I can also see him being a guy that, wants to ride it out because he loves Alabama. I think, his dad is a head football coach at the college level. I think there was probably some encouragement there from his father to stick it out, but, we'll have to wait and see. I'm actually kind of surprised, even though, this team is going to the playoff. I'm kind of a little bit surprised that we haven't seen more players this week enter the portal outside of Fia Jones-Bell. And there was one more guy. Can't even think of him right now.
But it's Buckner.
Buckner, yeah, that's right. That's Buckner, the star lacrosse player. I'm kind of surprised we haven't seen more names enter the portal yet this week, but I would imagine as soon as maybe that first playoff game ends, we might see some jump into it.
Who's Alabama got their sights set on that were really close to reeling in seniors high school?
From a high school perspective, I do think that you know, this is a big weekend for Alabama as far as official visits. One guy that we're watching pretty closely, Steve Mbamua, who is a defensive lineman out of Quebec City in Canada. He's going to be making his trip down to T-Town this weekend. This is his third visit. Certainly watching him pretty closely. Another offensive lineman, Faber Edwin. You know, these are two guys that are from African countries. Faber Edwin originally from Nigeria. And as I mentioned, Steve Mbamua from Cameroon. So you've got two guys coming in this weekend. Pretty intriguing prospects that we're keeping an eye on. Running back-wise, still watching, see what happens there. You know, one guy in particular that we're watching a little closer is Jaden Ball, Arkansas commitment out of Georgia. And then big announcement this weekend, Ryan Williams, five-star wide receiver out of Saraland, 2025 class. Does he potentially announce a reclassification to 2024? We'll find out on Sunday.
Hey, Bone, how can people read up on you?
Read everything I got at BamaOnline.com.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a good one.
You bet.
Thanks, Andrew.
His wife did all the children's Christmas shopping. Wow. Big time. Hey, Lars, we talked about the lowest over-under in college football. Who was it, Iowa State or something like that? What do you think the over-under is going to be on tonight's game in the NFL between Pittsburgh and New England?
I haven't looked it up, well, but I might
somebody
take
said
the
it's
under.
Gonna, somebody said it'll be the lowest since the forward pass. We'll take that topic up briefly and return.
Let's get your calls.
Yeah, we can do that. 205-342-9904. Take them for a half an hour and then some. You go to Ryan. This is Big Noon Sports.
What's for dinner?
Known as the Bama Broker. She's a Tuscaloosa native, an Alabama graduate, and the only realtor in town with Wall Street experience. A skilled negotiator, Laura Lee knows how to buy low and sell high. And the Bama Broker isn't just going to show you houses. No, Laura Lee is going to educate you on the market, guide you to homes that fit your budget, and teach you how to sell your home for its maximum profit. Throughout the entire process, the Bama Broker will equip you with the tools you need to both buy a home and build financial wealth through home ownership. Trust me, the Bama Broker, who's as roll-tied as Houndstooth, will get you across the goal line. That's Laura Lee Thompson, the Bama Broker with Advantage Realty Group. You can reach her at 205-790-7229. Again, that's 205-790-7229. And you can also email her at lauralee@thebamabroker.com. That's lauralee@thebamabroker.com.
From T-Town to the Plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Checking out the Thursday night football, which is going to feature the Steelers and the Patriots. Did you have a chance to look up during the break what the over-under was? I'm waiting for my computer to buffer. It evidently wants to be very slow at this particular time. But I did read the headline here. It says, little scoring forecast for Pat Steelers as low over-under is now set. It says here it could be the lowest since the 2006 divisional playoff game between the Panthers and the Bears, which was at 30.
Yeah, it right now it is at 30, and it's the lowest total. It's over. Yeah, this is at most sports books, and there hasn't been a total that low for an NFL game since 1993. But you shouldn't be surprised by this because Patriots' last three games, they lost 6-0, 10-7, and 10-6. there hasn't been a string of three low scoring losses like this since I'm not going to use the old joke, a team that you covered, Matt. I've beaten that one to death. But this hasn't happened since the 1938 Chicago Cardinals. I didn't even know the Cardinals ever played in Chicago.
Yeah, that I did know.
So, Kenny Pickett is out. Mitch Trubisky coming in for the rescue. And Pittsburgh's last three games, 24-10 loss, 16-10 win over the Bengals. Market 137. And a 13-10 loss. So this could be ugly. But you know what? Millions of people are going to watch. Why? Because it's football. And it's on TV. And it's the only game tonight.
It is, but the Thursday night matchups and the Thursday evening television ratings have been pretty dismal. In fact, I think it was last year, the end of the year before, Al Michaels even said something about it. Said, man, we are just getting really bad games. But to their credit, the Steelers, lack of offense and all, are 7-5. They're at home. They're very much in the playoff hunt. But
oh, absolutely.
Patriots are not. They're 2-10. What in the heck happened to Bill Belichick? And, you know, Mac had a pretty good first year. Didn't he not lead him to a first game of the playoffs?
I believe he made it to the Pro Bowl. And I think what we're seeing from Mac Jones is I think a couple things. One, he's lost his confidence. And his confidence at Alabama was just through the roof, right? I mean, and Belichick keeps benching him in games, and he doesn't know what to do. It feels like this could be Bill Belichick's last year. I mean, is it possible that Robert Kraft would fire Bill Belichick? I actually do, and hopefully they can make it a way that there's a graceful exit for Belichick, if that's the way that Robert Kraft wants to go.
I don't think he cares.
You know, they've been together a long time. And I mean, as you know, I've been deeply looking into this. And I think there's a lot of things that Kraft is just, he's just kind of over it. And the thing is, the Patriots have a chance. There's a lot of good quarterbacks coming out, right? You got Caleb Williams, you got Drake May. And if you could get one of those first two or three picks, one of those first two or three quarterbacks, I think Bo Nix is going to be really good. I haven't looked to see. I think Penix is going to be a good NFL player. So this is a rich quarterback class. And you're sitting at 2-10. You're going to draft a quarterback in the first round. There's little doubt about that. I think the Mac Jones era in New England, sadly, is for Mac, because we all like him. And I still think he has a chance to really resuscitate his career. And I think another reason why he hasn't had a very good season is Belichick. And this is the core reason why New England is in the situation that they're in. They have missed on draft pick after draft pick after draft pick. I mean, you remember I found that stat a couple weeks ago that in the last decade, New England has only drafted two guys who made the Pro Bowl. I think I don't know if Mac Jones did or not. I honestly can't remember, but they were special teamers. And so, wow. and they haven't gone out in free agency and got. I mean, Mac Jones is thrown to guys who wouldn't start at Alabama, even this year. You know, and it's just. And you remember we had Rick Christoffel on Tuesday, longtime NFL coach, and I asked him, why is Jake Browning? Why did he just have this amazing game on Monday night against Jacksonville? And he said, well, look at the guys that he's throwing to. You know, Tyler Boyd, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins. Can you name a single wide receiver for New England? I can't. And a bad offensive line. And again, Belichick as a coach is still Belichick, but he has never really had, he's always been the de facto general manager. He's the one who makes the call on draft day of who to select and who not to select. And he has just missed for a long time. And that's why New England is in the situation that they're in. And so, you know, if you are going to draft a quarterback really high in the first round, everybody anticipates that they're going to do that. It makes a lot of sense to bring in a new coach. And you have that quarterback and coach kind of tied together at the hip. You know, look how it's going in Houston. DeMarco Ryans, C.J. Stroud. I can see Kraft wanting to hire a guy who is known for developing quarterbacks and an offensive-minded coach and just moving on from Belichick. And if that happens, and if you read reports coming out of Boston media, it really sounds like it is going to happen. And it, in fact, it could happen before the season is even over.
That would just be extraordinary.
It would be extraordinary. I mean, can you? I can't recall a coach who perhaps is known as the greatest of all time being fired. I mean,
well,
Bear Bryant, would Bear Bryant have ever been fired?
Lars, you better watch what you're saying right now. No, there were talks about that. We can go into that on the other side of this break. But yeah, you know, Bryant had back-to-back 5-5, 6-5 seasons, and there was whispers back then. But nothing to the point where you've got all these racks of Super Bowl trophies. So anyway, hey, there's some news coming out of Michigan, news coming out of Ann Arbor concerning Harbaugh. Who else? We'll get to that on the other side of the break. You're listening to Big Noon Sports.
Are you ready to...
Securing the best mortgage possible requires a lender who has knowledge, is trustworthy, and treats customers like family. And no one is better at all of this than the mortgage miracle worker, Haley Sansing. Based right here in Tuscaloosa, Haley Sansing has spent decades working in the mortgage industry. With Haley, it's personal, holding your hand from contract to close. With Haley, it's about one thing, you. Call Haley on her cell, yes, her cell, 205-792-1813. That's 205-792-1813. Let Haley help you.
NLMS number 230376.
Tide 100.9, Tuscaloosa weather.
A sunny sky this afternoon, the high today 59. Clear tonight with a low at 37. Tomorrow, partly sunny during the day. A few showers are possible tomorrow night, the high 66. Saturday, cloudy and mild with occasional showers, the high 71. I'm James Spann on the ABC 3340 Weather Center on Tide 100.9. It's 58 degrees in Tuscaloosa.
From T-Town to the Plains. This is Alabama's most in-depth analysis on the SEC. This is Big Noon Sports.
Big Noon Sports has some Big Ten sports. Reports out of Ann Arbor that have developed just literally over the last couple of hours indicate that Michigan is working on a five-year, $55 million contract extension. One hurdle remains, however. According to one report, before the deal is finalized, Michigan wants Harbaugh to commit in writing that he will not pursue an NFL job for the duration of the new contract. My first thought on this right now is, geez, wait till it's over. I mean, haven't you gotten enough turmoil in Ann Arbor with Jim Harbaugh to suddenly start contract talks? Wait, Michigan. Bad look. Lars, your thoughts, and then we'll go to the phone.
Yeah, I think that Michigan wants to get a elicit from Harbaugh an act of loyalty, a sign that he's not going to go anywhere. Because, again, we've heard from Matt Finkus, who I really trust, that the Big Ten and the NCAA are kicking around the idea or the possibility that Harbaugh could be suspended for a lengthy amount of time in 2024, perhaps even the entire season. So I think that Michigan, again, they just want to make sure that Jim is ready to move forward with Michigan, regardless of what happens next year with the potential of a suspension.
I don't understand how you can do so wrong. Suspended a total of, was it 5 or 6 games for the season? Half the season.
Yeah.
And then he gets a raise, and even though he has just he's thrown poop all over his program for an entire year,
Matt, you beat Ohio State 4 times in a row, you're going to get a contract extension. What really matters is winning, and what really matters at Michigan is beating Ohio State, and Jim Harbaugh has done that.
We're going to take a couple phone calls here before we wrap up the show at 342-9904. That's area code 205. Let's go to Robbie. Robbie, what's on your mind today?
Hey, brother. What's going on, fellas? It's been a while.
It has.
Yeah, man. How you doing? How's Stryker doing?
He's doing okay. Back to dealing with those issues with his hips. You know, they're both fractured, and he got those shots a couple months ago in them, injections of Botox, and it only lasted 2.5 months, so he's back hurting a lot. Not as bad as he was, but it's still keeping us up at night. He doesn't sleep real well. So, but they're going to squeeze him in next week for more injections, getting those 8-inch needles right into the hips. It's going to, it's something. But other than that, he's doing pretty good considering. Yeah.
Well, what's on your mind today here, Robbie?
Well, like everything, you know, I'm glad Bama got in. They were deserving, but, you know, I feel bad for Florida State, not feeling bad for them. I mean, they'll be okay. They made the right choice. I just wish the board or the committee would have, you know, it comes down to the quarterback, and I get it, not playing, being hurt, but why didn't you take him out of the top four back then when it happened instead of leaving them there in the four and then winning out, and then on the last game, they keep on winning and you take them out then. You know, I wish they would have took them out back then if it was the quarterback issue. And I know Bama had the big win over Georgia, who was by far considered the best team in the country. But then if that's the case, why isn't Georgia in, and why is Georgia behind Florida State? So that's the only thing I hate about the committee stuff. But other than that, I'm glad we're playing. We get to play Michigan, who is probably more hated across the country than Bama is. So...
Yeah.
That's going to be good, finally.
What do you think of that matchup? What do you initial thoughts of Alabama playing Michigan in the Rose Bowl?
Well, initial is always the same, where our speed is going to be hard for them to match. And then I was always worried about the size thing because Michigan's known for being the size. But after seeing what they did to Georgia in the trenches and manhandling them, this is just going to be a game where I think Bama just – really pushes them around. I mean, it's going to be a great game. I mean, you got Harbaugh, who's a pro coach. You know he's going to be ready for everything he can for Coach Saban. But when it gets on, when those trenches get going, I was just impressed. Bama just pushed Georgia around. And Georgia is not a push around.
And, Robbie, you played baseball at Alabama. You spent several years in the minor leagues. So you know the mindset of an athlete, and I was really struck by the video that came out of the Michigan players and support staff and coaches, their reaction when they realized that they weren't playing Florida State, that they were going to play Alabama. And the reaction was like, oh my God. What in your mind, if you're an Alabama player, and clearly all the Alabama players have seen this, what is your reaction to it?
No, I mean, I saw it too, and it could go both ways. Yeah, one is like, oh crap, we got Bama, which that's probably the reaction from every team that's left in the the Final Four. Nobody, even Texas, probably doesn't want to play Bama again, but it was probably both, like, crap, we are getting Bama, but also, wow, they left Florida State out. I think that was a double reaction, like, can't believe they left them out. So you could go 50-50 whichever way, but I'm going to assume that they didn't want to play Bama first game. That's going to be a tough matchup.
But does that give a psychological advantage to Alabama already? Or am I reading too much into that?
I would say reading into it too much. I mean, yeah, Bama wants Michigan. Don't get it wrong. They know, and so does Coach Saban. I mean, come on now. It's always been a jab back and forth with Harbaugh and the Big Ten and SEC. So maybe a little, but I think they're just going to be prepared to be playing that helmet. You know, I don't think they're going to look at Michigan scared of them. It's smash mouth football with Michigan. So I think Bama's finally going to be ready for it. And I think we'll be healthy finally. A little worried about the transfer portal though. That just scares me. I hate that. Cause I think what they're now announced now and then the last day is after like the second. So if we do beat Michigan and get hopefully Texas again, or we're going to have players that are not going to be available for Texas, or is coach going to let them play, or, you know, what's going to be the mindset. But I guess that's just something we deal with later. But I guess everybody deals with that.
Players in the championship games are allowed another 5 days.
Okay, well, good, good.
Portal. Yeah.
Well, I'm ready for it. I don't know about y'all, but.
Bring it on. All right, Robbie. Our best to Stryker. Prayers to you.
Shit, guys.
Robbie Glenn, who played a lot of baseball at the Joe. Not sure it was called the Joe back then, but he played Alabama baseball, top level. All right, Lars, let's all remember Pearl Harbor Day, and I hope you just have a wonderful day, and we'll just keep on churning. Back in 22.